This is the Leading Saints Podcast. With the new name of our organization, we are going big. How are we going big? With a huge leadership conference happening November 27th in Salt Lake City, Utah. Now don't worry, if you don't live in Utah, it will be broadcast completely online for the world to see. This event will transform your ward council as you hear from Steve Schallenberger, Scott Robley, and even one of our most popular guests in the history of the podcast, Deanna Murphy. This is going to be a transformational event as thousands of members of ward councils gather in Salt Lake City or gather around their computer and apply leadership principles that will move your leadership to the next level. See all the details and get your entire ward council registered for free at leadingsaints.org.
Hello, Leading Saints community. My name is Jenna Lynn Biesinger. I am a Relief Society president in West Valley City, Utah. I have listened to the Leading Saints podcast for about a year and a half, and it has been so helpful that I have used a couple of the podcasts in training my presidency, and I have shared links with my ward council members. This past year, as we've experienced changes with having discussions rather than lessons, we had some resistance to the new format, and Leading Saints podcast has helped me to determine a philosophy. I didn't know that I had a leadership philosophy until I ran into this difficulty, but because of the things that I have heard on the podcast, I realize I do have a leadership philosophy, and it helped me to navigate through the situation and to smooth things out. So I really appreciate all of the guidance that Leading Saints offers to all of its listeners. Be a leader, not a calling.
Welcome back to the Leading Saints podcast. My name is Kurt Frankham, and I will be your host. If you're new to Leading Saints, I welcome you. This is a great community, and whoever turned you on to this resource, you should hug them. They deserve a hug. Next time you see them, hug them, because you are in for a treat to what we experience here at Leading Saints as a community of leaders coming together, striving to help other leaders be prepared to lead. And this episode is unprecedented. It is the first interview on the Leading Saints podcast with a former member of the General Relief Society president. In fact, she was a General Relief Society president. This is Sister Julie Beck, who we all know and love from her various conference addresses and her time doing so much for the Relief Society organization as she served as the General Relief Society president. I felt so fortunate to have Deseret Book help me line up this interview and talk about her experience in leadership, but also her experience writing a new book that is out called Joy in the Covenant, which I've had opportunity to peruse, and it's a fantastic book. It is a leadership book, and so if you need that perfect gift as we get into the giving season coming up, that perfect gift to say to a Relief Society president or any leader, thank you. This would be a great, fantastic book where they could learn some deep leadership principles. Now, obviously, having the opportunity to sit down with a former General Relief Society president, we talked about some serious leadership, and I was so grateful how candid she was about her experience, both during her time as General Relief Society president and also her time leading up to this. Obviously, she had various opportunities to serve in leadership capacities, primarily in the Young Women's Organization, and we talk about it all. And there's some home run leadership principles in this that I think you are definitely going to enjoy. But why am I keep talking? I know you want to listen to the interview. So here it is. The Leading Saints interview with Sister Julie Beck, former General Relief Society president. Today, I'm in downtown Salt Lake City in a room with Sister Julie Beck. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good. Well, this is quite an opportunity. I've seen you on TV a lot, but never in person. So this is a great opportunity.
People look different in person.
Right? You're a little more blonde than I think I remember you.
It's called being outside and sun-bleached hair.
Nice. Okay. Good. Good. Now, and you recently have poured your heart and soul into a book project that you recently released called Joy in the Covenant.
Yes.
And what was the impetus for this book project?
The impetus was that I'd been preparing messages for a number of events and things, and I wanted to share them with my family. But in today's world, you can't just send out an email. I decided I needed to protect those messages, and they needed some refinement.
Yeah,
I wanted them for my family and friends. People had been asking me to share, so I thought, well, let's see if we can collect these into something that would your book, and I'm quite pleased with it, yeah. How it turned out.
Yeah, I was able to read a good amount of it, and there's some engaging stories here, some that I never realized were part of your past of going to Brazil and some of those things that really obviously had an imprint, yes, on your life.
Well, these are messages prepared after my release as general president, so mm-hmm. they're much more autobiographical, more personal, just because of the places I was able to share each message.
Yeah.
They're all standalone messages, but they kind of connect with themes running throughout. I guess that's because
that's what life does to us. Yeah.
Life brings us certain lessons and we connect the dots here and there.
Now, many people may not realize, but your maiden name is Bangader, which is a very famous name in many aspects in Utah here. And long before you were speaking in general conference, your father, who was, did he go by W. Grant Bangader? Was that?
His people who knew him well called him Grant.
Uh-huh.
But he went by W. Grant a lot.
So Elder Bangader, nonetheless. Uh-huh. And was that, I remember when I was serving as bishop and my daughter was born, and I felt like she thought everybody's dad was a bishop and had an office in the church with candy. Did you feel like, were your earliest memories of him in some church capacity?
He was a state president when I was born.
Wow.
And a mission president and a regional representative. So yes, he was always out serving in some capacity mm-hmm. of leadership.
Yeah. So how old were you when he was called as a mission president in Brazil?
I was 4.
Wow. And so some early memories.
Early memories of, it's really where my conscious life began. I don't know if memory starts much earlier than 4 years old, but that's where things came into technicolor.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine now that, you know, you saw your father and your mother in some capacity leading and serving in certain ways, that probably had a lot of impact on your leadership, right?
Yes, they really were both remarkable leaders. And as I served as Relief Society General President and traveled around with other general authorities who knew my parents, they'd say, you were talking, you sounded just like your father. And then the next sentence, I thought you were your mother.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a good compliment.
So that was a nice compliment. Yeah. But they never said you sound like yourself. So, so it was kind of nice that they saw my parents in me. I felt it was an honor.
Yeah, for sure. So I would imagine that as you started serving on certain general committees and in, you know, you first served in the General Young Women's Presidency, what type of advice did your father and mother give to you in those moments when those more official general church callings came?
The first thing my mother told me about being Relief Society president was to enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. I love that part of the book that was sort of their motto on their mission.
Yes.
Right?
She says, you're not enjoying this, which was true.
Yeah,
I wasn't enjoying it. I was just so tied up in the intensity that I wasn't thinking about enjoying it. But through the years, as I had other church callings, I was a women president, a primary president, and other presidencies, places, and had a lot of leadership experience. My father taught some really specific lessons that seemed to emerge over and over again. And that I think became part of my service. He taught about revelation, that he taught a lot as we were children about who God is. I remember home evening lessons where he'd talk about I am and who was the Savior. He loved teaching about the Savior. He taught us about him. He taught me about whose work this really is. That came up in lessons throughout my life. So I was never tempted to say this was my work or my legacy or something to do with me. That's not saying that I didn't get caught up in myself at times just because of the intensity of the work. But the lesson from him is this is the Lord's work and he will talk to you. He will teach you what he wants you to do. Another great lesson he taught me is that the Lord builds his church by building people. He said that over and over again. He doesn't build it by building buildings. He doesn't build it by building programs. He builds his church through building people.
Yeah,
so
powerful.
We should focus on building people. And he did that very well. He was a gifted people builder.
Mm-hmm. And during your time as serving in these capacities, do any specific examples come to mind where you thought, okay, this is a moment where I need to focus on building people?
I think it was more of a pattern. But I'd sometimes get wake-up calls just working with board members on different things. I remember once in Young Women Presidency as a counselor, we were given the charge to see what young women web portion of the church website would be? What would our web presence be? This makes it sound like it was the olden days, and I guess it was. Things have progressed a lot in the last 15 years, but we didn't really have a young women web presence. We had a board member that as a presidency, we determined would chair the committee to develop what our web content would be. And then we'd meet with her and nothing had happened. And we'd meet with her and her committee and nothing would happen. And I just thought, we need to change the person. Mm-hmm. She was not believing in this assignment. She said, well, I don't know anything about the web. And so we haven't done anything. And finally, one day I said, do you have a computer? She says, well, because she'd make excuses. My son was on the computer. My daughter was on the computer. My husband was on the computer. And finally, one day I said, your husband makes a lot of money. And I bet if you went home tonight and asked him to buy you a computer, he'd go get one for you. Her eyes just got big. Uh-huh. She said, yeah, he would. He's always asking me what I want. And I said, well, you go tell him you want a computer. So the next time we met, she had this really cute designer computer bag with her own laptop in it. And she was learning her way around her own personal computer for the first time in her life. And then I said, so how are you going to build a web page? And she didn't know. But I said, you sisters kneel down and get revelation on how to do this. Because I'm not going to tell you. They went in somebody's basement and they wrote down all the topics they wanted. And they laid it out on the floor on sticky notes.
Yeah.
And that's how they built their web page. And they came back and said, here's what we should have. And I said, well, that's exactly what we want. But out of those women just grew and grew and grew in their capacity and their understanding of what's the internet and how do we use our computers until they were coming up with all kinds of inspired things. Hmm. I could have asked for somebody else to be on that committee, but I knew they were good women. And I knew the Lord would help and inspire them if we could just key into that.
Yeah. I love that example because I feel like it's so real to what many, you know, release site presidents in their local wards are experiencing, or bishoprics, or where it's easy to think, okay, this person's not, you know, measuring up. Who else we got? Let's put somebody else.
Yeah,
sometimes
we've got
easier
people
to
who will do it and who can do it.
Yeah. But to maybe step back and create some room, find some options for them to really dive in and seek
and
that
grow.
Direction and grow, right? Yeah.
And I still get cool things from her that now she knows how to put together all kinds of cards and things, but it expanded her world. And she laughs about it now, saying,
wow,
it took that challenge for me to try. That's just one example.
Perfect.
But,
well, continue. You talked about your father, the revelation,
one other
building
thing,
people.
That he taught me, and that was delegate, delegate, delegate.
Oh, nice. That's powerful.
That's how we grow. And I used to whine to him about that all the time, but there's no one to delegate to. I remember as a ward young women president, I did not have an advisor the whole time I was ward young women president. I didn't have a secretary. I didn't have a sports leader. And I was kind of whiny about not having any help. And he'd say, and so I'd say, this job's too hard. There's just nobody will help me. And he'd say, well, you just got to delegate. And I think, well, there's nobody else. And the bishop won't call anybody else.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And one day I looked at my Laurel president and I thought, she's a warm body. I'll delegate to her. So I just gave her the handbook. I said, New Beginnings is coming up. Here's what it says it is.
Wow.
You're in charge. She did a fabulous job. And I just started delegating to the Laurels. They became the advisors, the athletic committee, the camp advisors, my secretaries.
Mm-hmm.
And they all have become leaders in their own right.
Yeah, that was a great time for them to grow.
A revelation to me to look a little more outside the box.
Yeah.
And it was still good counsel.
Yeah.
Delegate.
And that fits perfectly into building people. I mean, that's how other people are built, right? What about in your experience as the general Relief Society president, where I, you know, from the outsider's perspective, it seems like you have all sorts of committees, people to delegate to, but there, I'm sure there's certain things that you just didn't want to delegate because maybe that's where you felt where your purpose was in that role. Any thoughts as far as delegation in that role?
As general president, I delegated everything I possibly could because there was so much I could not delegate. You can't delegate an assignment from the prophet or from an apostle. I learned something from President Nelson when he was Elder Nelson. One time I was in his office and, well, actually we were meeting with President Packer, and President Packer was his quorum leader.
Yeah.
And President Packer was talking, and I was thinking, oh, what he's asking us to do is a little bit hard. And and my mind was kind of swirling around this problem. And President Nelson, how you see him lean forward in his chair at conference, he looked President Packer right in the eye, and he said, "President, we would be pleased to respond to your direction." I thought, wow, I'm going to go home and write that on a card.
Yeah.
And I did, and I put it right by my phone so that when I got a call from one of my senior leaders, I knew what to say instead of saying, or let me think about that. I just read those words. "I would be pleased to respond to your direction." Then that got me started.
Uh-huh.
They had their response. I had my response. Then I could go to the Lord and say, "How am I going to do this?"
Yeah.
But there were a lot of things I couldn't delegate, but I did delegate as much as I could. I hired a housekeeper. I'd never had a housekeeper. I sent my husband's shirts to the laundry. I'd never done that before. Those are little things.
Yeah. But it meant probably was a big deal then,
but
just to have those little things taken care of.
I learned to use a secretary.
Yeah.
And push off everything I could to her. Even my family schedule, I'd say, "If you want us to come to a family event, you've got to call my secretary," because I might forget, but she'll put it on my calendar and then we'll be there.
Yeah. So how would you describe as far as what you understood as your official capacity as General Relief Society president?
My capacity was to be an agent of the prophet. I operated under his keys and under his direction. I was always provided with an advisor from the 12 and others of the 70 to help. But I always considered myself to be an agent of the prophet, that I didn't have a separate legacy from the prophet. Does that make sense?
And I appreciate you mentioned that legacy, because you mentioned it earlier that, you know, your father told you it wasn't necessarily about you, but about Heavenly Father and his will, and it's his work, right?
Yes.
And I'm sure it's easy to come in and sort of say on your day one, you know, "This is what the Julie Beck administration is going to be about. And this is what we're going to do. And this is how we're going to, you know, leave a legacy," but which can be powerful in some settings, but in that context, maybe that wouldn't have been appropriate.
Well, as you read the history of Relief Society, there is a great legacy.
Yeah.
And different presidents did focus on different things depending on the times. So there were people who would say, "Oh, you're going to have a great legacy if you do this. Or if you take this on, this will be your legacy." And they'd see me learning about something and say, "Oh, that's where she's going to make her contribution." Mm. But I felt that my job was to learn as much as I could about the church the prophet presided over. And the callings that he'd assigned me to be part of. For instance, the Welfare Committee. I was on the General Welfare Committee and on the Executive Committee of Welfare with my counselors and the presiding bishopric. I didn't know I was going to be on that committee when I said yes to the prophet. He sent me a letter later saying, "Here's your assignment." But I knew I couldn't be his agent if I didn't know anything about welfare. So I had to start visiting welfare installations and bringing people from welfare department in. We had our 10-minute orientation every single presidency meeting from somebody in the welfare department that said, "Here's wheelchairs, here's neonatal resuscitation, here's food storage." I just knew I was way behind on learning. So to be an agent, you have to learn what the person you're serving has to do.
Interesting. And I love this concept of, you know, being an agent of the prophet. Would it be safe to say, like, is that some encouragement you'd give to a Ward Relief Society president, that you are the agent to
the
bishop?
Absolutely.
Because of the keys, right?
Absolutely.
And you mentioned keys in the book.
You serve under the bishop's keys. And what is the bishop? He's the shepherd of the Lord's flock in that ward. He has charge over their temporal well-being and their spiritual well-being. And he has the keys to every ordinance for the people in there. He gets to determine if we can go to the temple, if we can take the sacrament, if we can bless our babies, if people get baptized. So we're dependent on the bishop, but the bishop can't be in every home. He's not going to have family prayer in every home and home evening. He can't pay tithing for people.
Mm.
He's dependent on us and our individual faithfulness to help him be a good shepherd of the flock. And then sometimes we all take turns being the weak and the strong, depending on our life experience. We might lose a job or we might get sick, and then we're the needy one.
Yeah.
We need somebody to lift us up. Yeah. So he apportions that with his keys of where does his asset pool go, the time and talents of the ward, so that everybody's strong. It's like a family. A family is only as strong as its weakest member.
Yeah.
Really, we're always trying to lift up the most needy one, and the bishop's always worried about the most needy family. Yet the strong ones he knows are there, but the Ward Relief Society president is there to provide relief.
That's so true.
To a bishop and for a bishop, and be his agent in apportioning that aid that goes out throughout the ward.
Yeah. So what would you say to a Relief Society president who hears that and thinks, well, so does that mean I just sort of go to the bishop and say, all right, what do you need me to do next? But even though that Relief Society president knows that maybe he doesn't have a perspective like the Relief Society president does, you know, that female sister perspective that maybe he's not taking consideration. So how do you balance that from following his keys and direction while also interjecting a perspective that he maybe hadn't considered yet?
Well, he provides the overall vision, and that vision is really the prophetic vision.
Yeah.
And he has his charge in the handbook, what he's responsible for, and he may have a few personal emphases that he's concerned about because he gets revelation as the bishop that he's maybe worried about certain patterns that are happening and seen in families. He can use the ward council to do that. But the Ward Relief Society president, when she set apart, she has a portion of those keys delegated to her. She has a portion of that revelation that she's supposed to get for him. That's not a passive role. That's an active role where you're getting on your knees and saying, how can I help the bishop be the best bishop he can be? It's not by me creating a legacy and good times for all and Relief Society. It's for me to fulfill the purpose. The purpose of Relief Society is to increase faith in the sisters, to strengthen their families, and to provide relief where they see it, and to work in unity with sisters to do that. So that's a specific purpose that she fulfills for the bishop. That's into the homes. I don't think it's passive at all.
Yeah.
One example is, I like to say that our youngest daughter was my tutor, because I'd never been a Ward Relief Society president.
Oh, really? Even to this day, you've never been?
I've never been.
Oh, wow.
One.
Nice.
Maybe I'll be punished with that. No, I'll be blessed with that.
Right.
But as I was general president, she was called to be a Ward Relief Society president.
Oh, wow.
And it was in a young, growing ward. There were 280 sisters in that ward when it was finally divided. They were 60% under the age of 35. That meant she had at least two babies born a week, one or two mothers on bed rest. Plus, then she had the other 40% that were the older ladies like me.
Yeah, yeah.
The cancer and the heart attacks and, and the other challenges that were happening. And so her first PPI with her bishop, she sat down and said, here's our statistics.
Which is natural to go there.
Yeah. So this is our percentages. I'm visiting teaching. And he said, well, how's this family? I don't know. How's this family? I don't know. She said he read off 10 names. And she went home and called me and just cried and cried. She says, I had the complete wrong report.
Yeah.
And I said, well, how are you going to get the right report? She says, I have to ask different questions.
Yeah.
And she taught me how she received revelation to minister to people. So that her next report was, these are the people that are okay. These are the people who've needed help and we've helped. These are the people who still need help and here's why. These are the ones that need ward council support. That had to happen through a lot of ministering and different kinds of questions.
And she was able to better understand the bishop's vision that he had a vision more focused on the people.
He was worried about people because he was the shepherd of the flock.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she thought she was the guardian of the statistics. That wasn't it. Her whole focus then changed in Relief Society. She says, we're not in the entertainment business anymore. We're in the education business because we have young families that don't know anything.
Nice. Yeah. So, and this is an interesting dynamic, and I get We get a lot of emails and questions around this dynamic of the relationship between the Relief Society president and the bishop. And I know there's some Relief Society presidents out there listening, thinking, well, my bishop doesn't really have a vision, or
he doesn't talk to me, or I can't get a PPI.
You've heard
if
these,
I pay right? for one.
You've been around the church a few times, right? And so, I mean, I feel like some Relief Society presidents are out there feeling like the bishop is just doing everything that, you know, I would like to do. If I need a new teacher, he just calls the teacher. If I need a new counselor, he just calls the counselor. And I sort of that autonomy is gone. And so, and not that, you know, I don't point the finger at the bishop saying that's the problem, but I mean, what should a Relief Society president begin to do in that type of situation?
Well, again, go back to this one leadership lesson. The Lord builds his church by building people. One of those people is the bishop.
Yeah. Amen. Wow.
And he's learning. He's in a big learning curve, and some bishops are more willing to learn and be taught than others. We know that because they're people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, even as Relief Society General President, I'd come in my office and stand in front of my secretary and roll my eyes and say, this work would be so much easier if we didn't have to deal with people.
Right, yeah.
Yep. But we do have to deal with people, and they all have lessons to learn. So that means we have to step back and say, what do I need to learn? What does he need to learn? How are we going to teach each other? How are we going to arrive at a place? And is it going to take a miracle, a ram in the thicket? Is it going to take a process of learning? Is it going to take more charity? Because the Lord's building us as a leader too. When I started out as General President of Relief Society, I was definitely not a finished product in that calling. I was a true beginner. Hmm. And I knew a little bit more when I was released.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're saying that, I mean, we have to take step back and realize, oh, the bishop is somebody under construction as well. I mean, we're all developing.
Yes, and it's not really about the program you want to have, and he has a different idea, and my idea is better than his, or he doesn't have an idea. Then you suggest some ideas. These are things that I'm concerned about, and my counselors and I have prayed about, and is there anything on here that resonates with you? Mm-hmm. Or that would help you. And sometimes it's asking inspired questions of the bishop. Bishop, I know you care about your calling this ward. When you can't sleep at night, what are you worried about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's powerful.
And think of him as a person. What keeps you awake at night? Because I'd like to help you with that.
Yeah. Yeah,
you,
that's powerful.
You set me apart to help, and let me help with what's worrying you. And then you can say, these are the things that are keeping me awake at night. And does any of that bother you? And if he says, that's not a problem, then say, okay, I'll worry about something else.
Yeah. I love that. Just the fact of sometimes we go to the bishop, and I remember having a lot of, you know, PPIs, whatever you call them, with my Relief Society president as the bishop. And it's easy to go to those meetings with it like, well, you know, what would you like me to do? I'm here ready to take notes.
Give me the list.
Yeah. But to go there with some really thought out questions and really push them on those priesthood keys that he holds and says, what are these keys telling you about this, about that, right? And really help him dig into that, what that vision is. That's what I'm learning.
Yes, and we're all at different places in understanding that. But our questions have to be more inspired when we're working with each other so that we can do what the Lord wants us to do. I love reading the scriptures with the Lord's questions to us in mind. Mm-hmm. I have a little spot in the back of one set of my scriptures where when Jesus says something, for instance, will you also go away?
Yeah.
So I read those and I go, oh,
makes
that's
you think.
A thought question.
Yeah.
And so those are the kinds of questions that we need to be thinking on instead of just give me a list of things to do and I'll execute those things and then I can feel successful.
Yeah. Right. But to really press them on that and bring some questions that are going to give you a deeper purpose and meaning.
So in leadership, we need to be careful of our success measurements.
Mm.
Is our success based on how many came to an event, how polished it was, how many people tell us it was great, if the flyers were good looking? What is success? I remember talking to President Irene once about missionaries and their success measures, because they can get caught up in this. How many discussions and how many baptisms, and not every missionary has that kind of a mission. So in Preach My Gospel, it teaches this on pages 10 and 11. Hmm. I'm giving you the pages.
Or we'll note them here.
So it's at the bottom of page 10, the top of page 11, where it says that if you have felt the Spirit in your work and the Lord directing you, then you're a successful missionary. And I think, well, why isn't that the same measure for any leader in the church? That if I can get on my knees at the end of the day as a Relief Society president and say, today I went here because I felt I should. Today I helped this sister. Today I made this phone call. Today I did this. And it wasn't what I planned, and I didn't cross off anything on my list.
I've been there.
Which is so frustrating because now I've still got that list. But today I went where the Lord wanted me. Thank you, Heavenly Father. I'm successful in this. You should feel that every day. And President Irene says it's tragic when a missionary gets to the end of their mission and asks that question. Was I successful? So that measure should happen every night.
Yeah.
And if you weren't so good,
Tomorrow. Yeah.
There's tomorrow. Yeah. And tomorrow, do a little bit better.
Wow, that's powerful advice.
Trying to feel the Spirit of the Lord in your calling. If we had more Relief Society presidents, young women presidents doing that, then we'd all feel successful.
Yeah. And I think the, your earlier point about letting go of legacy really helps to do that, because you're not, it's easy to get in there and be like, we're going to have the, you know, the best Relief Society weekday meetings that has ever been seen in the history of the stake. And we're going to come together. And then you sort of obsess over those details.
And then we'll put it on Pinterest.
Yeah.
And everybody will copy us.
Right. And so you can become absorbed in those little tasks. But to just step back and say, you know, a successful day to day is being more in touch with the Spirit, so I can go visit that sister when she's praying for that visit, or just act on that inspiration.
And that's successful. Yeah. And then you know who you're working for.
Yeah, nice. And that wow, that's powerful advice. Being called as the General Relief Society President, what's that experience like? Is it like being called as the Ward Relief Society President? You just get a phone call from an executive secretary and show up at an office? Or what do you remember about that experience of your own?
Yes, Brother Don Staley, President Hinckley's secretary, called and said, can he call on a Friday, which I think is really mean. And said, can you meet with President Hinckley Monday morning?
Oh, and so you have all weekend
to
mull it over.
All weekend to just worry.
And at this point, I mean, you were in the young women's presidency, and you weren't expecting a release at that point from there. So,
and I knew we were expecting a new president.
A Relief Society president, yeah.
So I had a sense that was coming my way. You try and push it off because it's not something you want to seek. But I had a sense that it was coming. So I...
And this was a week before conference, or?
It was about 2 weeks before conference.
Nice. And then you went to your appointment, and it was extended.
And there was President Hinckley, and he just he gave me some very clear direction. He shared with me his concerns about the Sisters of the Church, his vision about them. And I could see he was clearly laying that portion of the work upon me. When I was set apart, I was told that I presided over the great worldwide sisterhood of Relief Society.
Wow.
So to preside means this sort of dominion and leadership.
Yeah.
That was under his prophetic keys. So that was a revelation to me. Oh, it's not just a task list and meetings to attend, that I preside over a work, a portion of the work.
Mm-hmm.
And you approach it differently when you feel that a ward president presides over a portion of the work.
Yeah. And I think that's such a helpful context to see it in, because you're not just an additional, you're my assistant to help with all the women, but no, you're presiding over this
it's
portion.
It's not just, okay, you girls go over here and do what it is you do. But President Hinckley helped me understand that this was a portion of the work. The other lesson he taught me in that calling, and he said it three times. He said, now, after you leave here, you're going to meet with a couple of the apostles, and they're going to help you. You're going to talk about counselors, and I want you to know that in this church, presidents choose their own counselors. And then we talked some more. And then we got to the end of the interview, and he says, now, next, you're going to want to think about counselors, and I want you to remember, he was a little more clear this time, that in this church, he says, they'll have some names of wonderful women that people have suggested, but in this church, presidents choose their own counselors. And I said, okay, president. And then we got up to say goodbye. We were at the door. I was leaving, and he said, "Sister Beck." I turned around. And he said, "Remember, in this church, presidents choose their own counselors."
Oh, wow.
And
really was, emphasizing
he emphasized, he almost shouted it. And I said, "Okay, president." And it was so interesting because the next meeting I got in, there was a lot of pressure to choose counselors that were being suggested. And if he hadn't told me the third time,
you may have given in to
all that self-doubt that comes that moment. Yeah. You think, well, these are men that are inspired and they know. So
you went to like other meetings where not that people were like trying to influence you, but maybe trying to help you
They were trying to guide me. But I thought as they were talking and they had specific women, I took that list home and I prayed about it. I took the work that had been done to prepare me seriously. But I realized that what they were suggesting was a type of person
with certain demographics.
And
background.
I realized that the Lord had already told me the names of two women who were that type. They weren't on that list, but they could have been. And so really in this church, presidents choose their own counselors. Now, I served as young women president for 5 years under a bishop who chose my counselors. I'd already been primary president for 5 years. The ward had been reorganized 4 times and I had chosen counselors every time. But when I became young women president, he said, "I think you're too young and immature to choose counselors, so I've already called them."
Oh, wow.
They were both old enough to be my mother, and they stayed there with me for 5 years.
Yeah. And you would appreciate it if you have that advice earlier.
We were never really a great homogenous group for all we tried.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's because the bishop didn't understand that in this church, presidents choose their own counselors.
That's a powerful principle. Yeah. And for a bishop to reiterate that with, you know, a newly called Relief Society president would be powerful.
It affirms her right and ability to get revelation. It's the first step she makes to be a partner with the Lord in her call. And if you deny that to her, then you have just chopped off the leg of the stool she needs to access the Lord's help.
Yeah.
It's what we have to affirm, that we all get revelation.
Yeah.
On the other hand, as a counselor, I learned, I was Sister Tanner's counselor for 5 years almost. And she divided things up so that we had different bodies of work that we supervised. It would have been easy to just say, "This is my part," and take off and go. And one day I was talking to Brother Mike Nider, who was in the General Young Men Presidency, and I said, "So what's your part of your Young Men Presidency?" And he said, "My job as a counselor is to help President Dahlquist be the best young men president he can be." I thought, wow, that is powerful. Yeah. Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah.
I knew it.
Yeah.
But I hadn't been thinking that.
It's not just about your assignments, right?
From that moment, I really changed my focus with regard to my president. I accepted the assignments and I worked, but I was more compassionate toward her. I wanted to lift her burden. I wanted to be an Aaron or a Hur.
Yeah.
To lift up her hands. And I was thinking, oh, we're a team, we're a presidency, and this is all fun. But Brother Nider helped me see she's the president. She carries a different weight.
Wow. And what did that look like day to day or week to week? Was it just touching base with her, asking her more often?
Yes, asking more often and saying, "This is what I'm thinking," instead of "This is what I'm doing." To ask for her input and feedback and approval. She was always very affirming, encouraging, and was not a controlling president at all. She had confidence in other people. But it lifted her up and it allowed her to get revelation for the whole package.
Yeah.
I learned this again by watching the first presidency. I was in many meetings with them the years.
Yeah.
With President Hinckley as the prophet and with President Monson as the prophet. And I testify that their counselors never once in my presence did one little toe touchy into the purview of the prophet. They didn't even explore the air of his calling. They were always focused on helping him be the best prophet he could be. As general president, that was one of my big takeaways.
Yeah. So in that context, what would you say? Obviously, you've served on a lot of councils and were in meetings with the First Presidency and others. I know that there's a lot of Relief Society presidents out there, primary presidents who sit in ward council feeling like, well, I'm, you know, speaking up and sharing opinion, and then, you know, people disagree or the bishop sort of takes a different direction. What best practices would you give for a sister in the church in leadership who sits on a council?
First of all, remember those first lessons that we all get revelation. Uh-huh. The Lord is building people, and this is all about delegation. And so really have to get over yourself. Mm. Get over yourself, because it's not about you. It's the Lord's work. You're his agent.
Yeah.
You can't do this in the correct way if you are trying to stand out as a visible voice or a representative. I sat with President Packer soon after I was called as general president. And he said, "President, which way do you face?" Hmm. And I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, I'm just interested. Do you stand with the sisters facing the senior brethren and advocating their needs to us? Or do you stand with us facing the sisters and advocating the prophetic vision?"
Hmm.
And I said, "Is there a right answer?" He says, "It's a choice." "And whatever you choose will determine how we can work together."
Yeah. Wow. Because there's a balance there, right?
Yeah, well, but that is a choice. Uh-huh. Which way do I face? And so I looked at him, and it was just the Spirit just told me, said, "President, I stand with you, and I face out to the church."
Mm. And I bet it's so easy probably for, I mean, even regardless of what calling, not just Relief Society, but there is probably a good question for a Relief Society president or a Young Men's president or Elders Quorum president to stop and say, am I sort of trying to face towards the bishop rather than with the bishop?
I can come every week and advocate a certain course of action and put pressure on the bishop to act in a certain way. Or I can stand with him and face out to the ward.
Mm. And have the advocation go that way.
And
right?
Have the advocation go that way. Does that mean I didn't care about the sisters and their concerns, that I didn't see them, that I didn't notice them?
Sure. Yeah.
That's no. I visited, I knew intimately, but because I was the agent of the First Presidency, then I could say, here's what I'm seeing. And this is the way we can think about it. And what that does is it creates a relationship of trust.
Yeah.
That
so
you
crucial.
Can't get when you're all advocating a certain position.
It happens. So,
yeah. You know, we can all defend our position.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Right, right.
It's really hard to stand together as a unified group, as a ward council, and say, we're the Lord's agents.
Yeah.
And we're going to get over ourselves.
Yeah. It makes me think of like a typical example of maybe there's a certain sister in the ward that sort of there's this passive aggressive tug of war between the primary presidency and the Relief Society presidency. Well, no, we need her in here. No, we need her in our auxiliary.
Yeah, who's the most important auxiliary?
Right, exactly. Oh, the Relief Society president always gets the good people, right? But to really just step back and say, why don't we have, you know, be an advocate for the bishop and his keys and think what's best for the ward?
And how can we allocate the resources in a way that's really going to lift everybody up?
Yeah, that's a power. I mean, that's such a unifying message and a unifying point to be as a ward council.
It's
to come
a mature
together.
Church view. And we're not there yet, but I think we will be.
Yeah. Well, that's powerful. So what would you, a Relief Society president on her first day, you talked about choosing counselors and such awesome advice. And I'm curious about your first day as general Relief Society president. It sounds like you got some general direction from President Hinckley and the First Presidency, but touching on this concept about avoiding not there necessarily build a legacy, a Julie Beck legacy that will build a statue somewhere. So day one, like, how do you get started?
Well, when you're the general president, you sit down and there's a calendar already there.
They just hand you the calendar.
Here's your folder. Go to this meeting and don't be late.
Yeah. So you make sure you understand what you're over and
yeah, it takes some time to adjust to that because there's a full calendar. The pace of the church does not stop just because you got a new call. It's like changing a tire going 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
and you're losing lug nuts all over the place.
That's a great way to look at it.
So, but you just try and hang on for the ride and do what you think is expected.
And you just got to jump in, it sounds
like. You just jump in and you do what you can. And I learned to fake it a lot. It was terrifying. It was discouraging. It was mystifying. It was bewildering a lot. Just the volume of work that was there. And I remember early on, one or two or three of the 12 would see me somewhere in a hall and stop. And they'd say, "How are you doing?" Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, they really care. I thought, oh, they're so nice and they're just compassionate men and they really care. And so I start to tell them and their face would just go blank. I'd say, oh, you know, it's just overwhelming and trying to, and then another one had asked me and, oh, yeah, this is, I just wish I knew what I was doing. Uh-huh. And then my Elder Perry asked me and I started to tell him and his face just went blank. And I thought, you know what? They really don't care. They're overwhelmed too.
Yeah, we're all in this together.
I thought, wait a minute. They're not paying me so-called to be bewildered and overwhelmed and uncertain.
Yeah.
I'm here to take charge of this and shoulder it the best I can. So after that, Elder Perry asked me how I was. I say, terrific. I'm just doing great.
Yeah.
He say, oh, I love your positive and optimistic attitude. And I say, yeah, Elder Perry, I'm optimistic like you are.
Yeah.
But it was good to assume that role of just saying, we know who we're working for. Of course, it's overwhelming.
Yeah. Everybody knows that. We don't have to keep saying that.
So you're not here to whine.
Yeah.
And it actually built my confidence. Because I thought they expect me to be a peer and a grown-up. They don't want me to be a girl in the room. Yeah. They want me to be a voice and a representative and put in the work they're putting in.
Yeah. And that didn't mean you didn't have anywhere to take your concerns or questions, but to just take that moment to own the calling, right? To just say, you know what, if this is what I'm asked to do, let's do this.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Wow, that's a powerful principle because I think a lot of lucid presence, they can just, and it's in our culture. I mean, even bishops and things where we have to sort of feel like, oh, well, I'm supposed to be overwhelmed. So let me tell you how overwhelmed I am.
We think we're being humble when we do that.
Yeah, exactly, right?
So you don't want to be too confident because then people won't think you're humble.
Right. It's like, oh, this is pretty easy, actually, right? You don't want to go that way.
But reality is that we are doing terrific because we're on the Lord's errand. It's His work. In the end, it's all going to work out.
Yeah.
And that doesn't ignore that there are challenges. It just means that we're okay.
Yeah. Awesome. Any direction or principle that we didn't hit on that you'd want to mention before we conclude?
I think something I'd like to mention is the magnitude of this work. I touch on this a little bit in my book, Joy in the Covenant, that we're part of the house of Israel. And when you're in the house of Israel, you're the Lord's covenant family. He has specific things he needs his family to do in the latter days. He needs it gathered up. He needs it taken care of. And we build that family. The process of that development is described in Jacob chapter 5. And getting the refinement down to where the Lord can come and say, this is the most precious fruit that I had from the beginning and what I had in mind. And we're part of that right now. It's easy in a ward and stake level, I think, and sometimes often in a family, to think this is just a mundane, repetitive, unrewarding work.
Yeah.
And the closer down you get into families, you realize that the sun shines on the happy and the sad, and you deal with the unpopular and the unattractive people and problems. It's not very heroic on a day-to-day basis. Young mothers wrestle with the dailiness of what they have to do. You fix a meal, you clean it up. You've got to fix another meal and clean it up. And it just never ends.
Mm-hmm.
And then you wash a load of clothes and people take off their clothes and there's another big pile of clothes to do. If you have to work, you've got to face that. If you're alone, you've got to wake up feeling alone again and do the dailiness of life. But being part of the house of Israel gives us a real identity that is magnificent and glorious and holy. you just listen to the sealing ordinance of the temple and visualize how the Lord sees us. When a child is sealed to parents in the temple, they become an heir with all other children.
Yeah, it's powerful.
It's powerful. Our prophet is talking to us about being part of this work. It is not minuscule. It's not unimportant. It is in the daily tasks, it adds up to be many, many little things.
Yeah.
But they all count in the math of the Lord. Work in families counts.
Awesome.
All those necessary tasks count. Gathering in people that aren't in the covenant counts. But this is a magnificent and holy and grand work. And I hope we can find more joy in it.
Absolutely. Well, I got one more question for you, but just so obviously the book's available at any Deseret Book online. They can order it as
yes.
well. And is there an audiobook?
There's an audiobook.
Is it
I
your
read
voice?
It myself. It's my
oh,
voice.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So if you don't like my voice, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sure it's great. But absolutely, if there were ever a leadership book written and published by Deseret Book, this would definitely be it. And so a great gift for any leader in the church or encourage them to read it for sure. Last question I have, as you look back at your service as General Relief Society president and any leadership calling you've had, how has that made you a better follower of Jesus Christ?
The General Relief Society calling is a macro calling. You have this global scope where you're thinking on big, massive terms of people. I always try to get into homes of people to help me remember about the micro work. But now taking that, the lessons I learned from that into my family has been the greatest blessing I've had, because families are the real crucible. There's a reason the Book of Mormon is a story about families and their challenges. There's a reason the Lord seals us up into families here, because it's the toughest laboratory of learning there is. It'd just be easier to get a dog and get on with doing it yourself. But that's not what he has in mind. And it's such a learning, growing experience, as we've discussed. So I've tried to take the macro work and apply those lessons in the micro work. I care for a 94-year-old mother now.
Wow.
She has dementia and she's got a weak body. She needs help deciding everything. I write the checks and pay all her bills and tend her farm, and I have to take care of the hay and get a horse to a vet when it's sick.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's real life things, and fix the truck when it's broken, and then help our daughters when they need help, and grandchildren when they need help, and all kinds of things. Help the neighbors on either side of me and the sisters that I minister to and brothers and sisters and their families. Sometimes it just gets kind of weighty because it's a million things that are micro work. And I hope we never forget that that's what the ministry of the Savior was. He walked. He lived his life at 3 miles an hour. He didn't ever have a faster vehicle than his own feet. Maybe a donkey, but they're not fast either. And he lived at 3 miles an hour. We have a speedy time when we think we've got to pack more in and do more and multitask and do more to be measured better by the Lord. But his ministry was one-on-one at 3 miles an hour. So I have to think of that when I'm tucking my mother into bed when she doesn't want to go to bed and rubbing her feet and singing her songs she sang to me when I wouldn't go to sleep as a little girl, and helping her make decisions that take time and patience. It's the Lord's work.
That concludes our interview with Sister Julie Beck. A big shout out to her being so kind to allow me to throw these questions at her and really dig into some of these sticky areas, as it is with leadership. I love the principle she made that presidents in this church choose their counselors. I know there are wards out there, there are bishops out there, that sometimes they maybe overreach their hand and think, I'd rather just pick the counselors for my auxiliary presidents. Step back. Allow them to have that autonomy to choose their counselors, their primary teachers, those people that are in their auxiliary. Give them that autonomy. And I get it. There's going to be times when there's an arm wrestle with one individual because one auxiliary wants them in their auxiliary, the other wants them in their auxiliary. But be patient with it and use your keys to direct those struggles. But give them autonomy. A happy bishop is because they have a happy ward council. I truly believe that. So again, thank you to Julie Beck for being so willing. I hope there's others like her that have been in some of these unique, influential, general leadership callings that we can reach out to. I know for a fact that we'll have some more in the future. Nothing set yet, but I'm encouraged. If you do have a connection to maybe an emeritus general authority or somebody who served in an auxiliary presidency, maybe send them this episode and say, you should really consider sharing some of your experience on this podcast, because it is through the distribution of these ideas that they are further perpetuated, right? And that's what we want. We want good leadership. We want prepared leadership.
And don't forget to go to leadingsaints.org to register for the November 27th Leadership Conference.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the own and only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.